And today I have Ali Sedeno, and she's the founder and president of Women Offshore, a nonprofit organization within the maritime industry. Welcome, Ali. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for having me, Marianne. It's great to be here.
So for those who don't know what Women Offshore is, it's basically a nonprofit organization that is propelling women to have meaningful careers at sea and also helping them professionally develop as well. And they have resources, and they want to raise awareness amongst the industry leaders and decision makers about issues affecting women in the water, which you guys know that I'm all about that. So this is why we have Ali today. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are, how you came to found Women Offshore, and what's the real mission behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a graduate of the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. I graduated in 2008 and I went to sea. I worked on ships for 10 years before taking a break, getting my master's degree, and now I'm back on the water. But often I was the only woman on board, or one of the only women, and I needed role models. I wanted to know other women. I didn't really have a sense of belonging in the industry. I questioned if I belonged and where I could be long term. But in 2015, I got on a ship where there were a lot of women. And because of that, my presence on board was normalized, and I felt accepted. There were women I could go to when I had questions about being a woman on board. And I think we mentored each other without realizing that was what we were doing. So I thrived in that environment, and I was promoted. With that promotion meant a transfer to a ship in South Korea, which was really exciting as well. But it meant that I was going to be the only woman on board. And I missed that camaraderie, that sense of belonging that I had had previously. And I thought that's how the industry should be, where women belong and they have a network and people accept them on board. They're not this anomaly walking down the deck. So I thought the industry is not going to change. Maybe I could do something myself and create a place online where we could connect and women could find resources and what they need to empower their own careers. So I started Women Offshore in 2017, first as a blog site to really be the place that I always needed, and grow it from there. And here we are about 5 years later. It's a nonprofit organization. We have a mentoring program, our own podcast, various resources, and an annual conference, another career day event that we do. And it's just, it's a lot, but it's so much fun. I love connecting with other women on the water and getting to know them and helping them with their careers.
Amazing. I have had women around me, like even if it's like maybe three of us on board or four of us on board, feel that same feeling of that you were having of not belonging and not feeling normalized. I think it's also like a paradigm and a mentality that, and like a stigma around it, that even some of us as women also take it in and just start working from that place because of we think that's the place we need to be on. Because I see many women within the industry, we don't like patriarchism and we don't appreciate all these things that has developed throughout the years. But then again, a lot of us maybe subconsciously do end up following those rules and those paradigms, those mindsets.
Yeah. So I think what you're getting at is tokenism. And so when you're the only woman on board or one of just a few, you're not necessarily a minority, you're a token. And as a token, you view yourself differently. You feel like you're representing your gender. You might fall into certain gender norms because you just think that's expected of you. And it is expected of you because as a token, you're viewed as representing your gender. And the harassment, everything is magnified there. And it's unfortunate. So we really need critical mass. That's one of the answers to supporting women, is getting more women on board. Because as you increase the numbers, women are viewed more as individuals. And then when they're viewed as individuals, they can tackle their careers as individuals, what they really want. And then they're treated a lot better, to put it simply, by the people around them. So we need more women on board as part of the solution. Move away from the tokenism, get to about 30%. and you'll see that there'll be a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. So one of the things that a question that I have for you is, in the mission of statement of Women of Shore, you said, it's written that you guys are raising awareness among industry leaders and decision makers about issues affecting women on the water. Who are the decision makers that you're talking about?
Yeah, so really anyone that's going to listen, right? So we have a podcast that's weekly, and we talk about things there that we want the industry to know, how we want the industry to change. And we know that there are a lot of executives and decision makers, government officials who tune in and they take notes and they send us feedback that they're applying what they've learned on our podcast to their companies. Same for our conference, executives and decision makers attending our conference and coming back to us later on how it made a difference in their thought process or something they were working on, and they were going to then implement these changes that they learned from Women Off. We also work closely with our sponsors, and we develop relationships there so that we can share with them our knowledge and what we've learned, and you know, the things that we've learned along the way from our own experiences and talking to women are important, and we're always trying to get the word out.
One of the things that I was drawn to towards Women of Shore was because you guys have started to talk about SASH, which is sexual assault and harassment on board. And I'm a huge speaker about that topic and anything that's taboo within the industry. And I want to talk about how's that in the commercial scene, right? Because like in the yachting industry, it's not normalized. It's not a topic that's normalized. And this is why we continue to talk about it, because we need to normalize the topic. It's something that a lot, mainly women, go through, but don't report for reasons. I'm going to get fired, or somebody else reported it. Nothing happened. I'm just not going to go down the road. Or the captain said to them, don't you know who the owner is? Or maybe the chef was the perpetrator and they go, the owner likes their food, so deal with it. You name it. There's a lot of different things. So how does that look like in the commercial scene?
Yeah, so the stories have always trickled in. And we've been talking about SASH-related issues for a long time. But we've primarily done it behind closed doors. So it looks like, at our first event in 2018, having a panel about SASH and challenges related to SASH. But it was a room full of women, right? And it was supportive and eye-opening, but no one really knew about that conversation beyond the 40 people there. The stories coming in to our website, that meant that we provided resources and support to those women, but we're not out there sharing those stories publicly. So it's just been this well-known, in a way, secret, right? Something that people don't talk about publicly in the maritime industry, but we all know it's there. We all know people with experiences in the women offshore community. We have our own experiences, some similar to the Midshipman X story. It's the industry is a mixed bag. You have amazing vessels with outstanding crews where women can really belong and thrive. And then you have bad apples and you have people that shouldn't be there. And you have people covering things up or denying it. It's just a mixed bag in the industry. So it's really important that we talk about it publicly. And we decided over a year ago that we were going to start having these conversations on the podcast, at our conference, anytime we could on social media without it being too overwhelming, right? Because we have other issues too that we want to tackle in the industry, but we're going to make this a priority. And so on our podcast, we did, I think, a 7-episode series on SASH earlier this year, and we've had other episodes since then. And at our conference, we had a panel discussion, and the head of the Coast Guard Investigation Services here in the US was on that panel. It's just, it needs to change. It all needs to change. We all need to do better. We all need to encourage reporting. People who are in decision-making roles need to make sure that the reporting process is more transparent, so there's trust there in reporting. And we need to make sure that people are held accountable. So everyone, the whole industry, needs to come together. And we've been seeing that a lot lately since the Midshipman X story, where companies are making changes to policies and the Maritime Administration released the embark standards. And there's talks about further changes to regulation. The conversation should not ever end, because this is not something that's going to go away. It's in society. It's everywhere. It's not just the maritime industry, but the maritime industry needs to change. We need to make sure that it is a safe environment for everyone, and that there are serious consequences for sexually assaulting people, and that harassment is not going to be tolerated.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you for joining the conversation that's no longer behind the doors, that it's out there in front of people and saying, this is not okay, this is not tolerable, and we're going to speak about it. And like you said, it doesn't have to be an overwhelming conversation, because I feel that just talking about it normalizes it. It's, yeah, we're having a conversation the same way that we would have a conversation about uniforms.
Yeah, you know? It's like, hard though.
Conversation. It should be that way.
It's really hard, because you're asking a group of people who've gone through terrible experiences to talk about it. And you end up, as a victim, reliving trauma in that. And we can try to normalize the conversation as much as possible, but we also have to be aware that when you're talking about this, you're talking about your own traumas, or you're maybe asking someone to relive their traumas, and that can be really unfair. So we have to be very sensitive when we have these conversations publicly, give warnings ahead of time.
But I also believe that you don't have to relive the story, and you don't have to re-traumatize, because obviously that wouldn't be a good thing. And there's ways of going around. And I feel like a lot of people that do want to share their story, somehow they have already worked through their trauma.
Maybe.
So they have found their voice to really speak of and inspire others. The stories that have come to me, people that are on the show, they have worked through that. So they're able to stand strong. We don't go over what actually happened. Like you said, we're not wanting to relieve the trauma. It's just, this is happening. If you want to share details, great. If you don't want to, that's fine. But also, a lot of people have come anonymously with their stories recently, because that's how they are able to share right now. Like, it doesn't matter. Everything's welcome, because there is healing in talking about it. Not in relieving it, of course, but there is some sort of healing that happens when you just say, this happened to me. Especially,
yeah, I think everyone's different.
For a long time.
I mean, it works for some people, but not everyone. And we have to be careful with these stories. We have to hold them with sensitivity.
No, absolutely. I agree. But I think that sometimes we have hold them so sensitively that we haven't given it the time that they need, because it's always been behind closed doors. Like you said, for you guys, it was, for us, it was, we talked about it, but among women behind the door, and now it's not, let's just talk about it. And we don't even need stories to talk about it. We're talking about it without a story in that sense. It's just normalizing the topic. That's what I'm getting to. But now that you're talking about Sash, and you said that you have all these panels going on and people in high places that can potentially change regulations, and that you have seen that companies are wanting to change their own policies and all that. One of the biggest things that people ask me within the maritime industry is like, where do regulations change? Because it's not black and white, right? And people say to me, Sash, is not something that is just unique to the maritime industry. Absolutely not. Like, we know that. But there is uniqueness within it, because we are at sea. We don't have the same resources, because regulations are different. We're actually behind. There's no place, literally a place that you can go and you can say, hey, this is happening to me. Some people, commercial might be a little bit different, but for a private vessel, you don't have a shore support. You don't have a designated person ashore. There's no human resources. There's so many different loopholes within the maritime industry. When you talk about potentially regulations changing, who does that? Who are the people that are in charge for that to happen for the entire maritime industry?
Right. So with that, you have the Coast Guard, right? So if there's no HR department, there's no one to talk to.
That's in the United States, though.
Yeah. And so that's my perspective. It's from the U.S. So we do have the Coast Guard to report to you. And here in the U.S., there's a TIPS app, right? So if you have a situation going on, you can report it anonymously through the TIPS app, the U.S. Coast Guard TIPS app, and they will investigate it. So as far as regulations changing, that can vary country to country. And the IMO needs to take a clearer stance on sexual assault and sexual harassment so that we can have actual change across the industry, across nations. But here in the United States, what that looks like is right now you are ineligible for a U.S. Coast Guard commercial marine credential if you have a drug or alcohol violation. However, if you're a sex offender, it doesn't say if you're ineligible or not. That happens during the review process, and there's not a lot of information there. So why don't we have that change and the regulations that if you are a sex offender, there's a clear stance there that you are ineligible from MMC. We need to have clear and concise regulations that show that if you are convicted of sexual assault, you will be ineligible to work on the water. Now, when it comes to harassment, that's not necessarily a criminal offense. And so there's gray area there. So having some sort of database of people who have been fired, who've been gotten in trouble with their companies regarding harassment and all sorts of bad behaviors around that would be important so that we can keep track of these people and ensure that our vessels are safe. So those are some of the ideas coming about right now, and we'll see what kind of changes are implemented. But it definitely needs to all change.
Is there any background checks done within the commercial? Because like in yachting, there's no background check. But you can pay your license, you're good to go.
Yeah, background checks are interesting. What I've learned about background checks is that the standard background check doesn't necessarily include the sex offender list. You have to pay extra for that. Now, a lot of companies right now, they check everything, but that's on the company, not necessarily on the U.S. Coast Guard giving the credentials. There's change that could be done there where it's required, right, as part of the background check. Now, it could be being done right now. We just don't see it in the regulations. It's not known. So that goes back to my point earlier about this transparency. It's so important that we have more transparency in the industry regarding eligibility for credentials around literally everything when it comes to investigations, what goes on there. We need to know if we could clear up some of these issues and understand what happens during these processes, then we would feel more comfortable, we'd feel safer, and we could also make some changes so that we can be safer as an industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you say, there's so many, it sounds like there's so many little things that are so easily to implement that can create a massive transformation and safety. And maybe, like you said, they are being done, but transparency needs to be there so we know that this is actually happening. And we can trust, right, the ones that right now we're not trusting because of not being transparent. What about policies on board? For example, in the yachting industry, I think out of a survey of 800 something people, I think it was like less than 50% of the people said that they have seen SASH policies on their crew books or whatever it is that they call them. How is it in the commercial industry? Are those very clear, transparent? This is what happens. This is a procedure. Or is it not?
It varies from company to company. It depends on how much the individual is paying attention to that too, right? And they can probably look it up if they need to in an HR manual. But is that information posted on their vessel? Probably not. That needs to change. And that's coming out in the Maritime Administration and BART standards for carrying U.S. cadets, and that there will be postings of these policies, resources around sexual assault and sexual harassment.
Yeah. I think that also will help make sure that the perpetrators know we're watching.
Yeah, and encourage And yeah, encourage bystander intervention too, right? Because it's not just about the victim and the perpetrator, but also the people watching.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad that you say that, because on one of my episodes, we were talking about this, about how important the bystanders really could play a big role when they see something and when they can be of support to the person that's being victimized. When it comes to what I wanted to ask you, okay, yeah, this is another thing, because in my short investigations, I would say, I have seen a lot of loopholes, right? For example, in yachts, and I think commercial vessels, there's a little bit of a safer environment in the sense that you do have an HR. You have some sort of policy sometimes. You can go to a company, right? But in private vessels, especially less than 500 tons, is just party. It's just like crazy. It's like whatever you want, it goes. Nobody's held accountable. There's nobody really taking responsibility for the people that are in these vessels. So my question is, when SASH happens, one of the big things is that, especially let's talk about rape, you need evidence if you want to move forward in court and all that, which it is what it is. It's the law. And when you're at sea, sometimes you don't have a hospital to go to, especially if you're like in the middle of Atlantic and you're doing a crossing, for example, for us. Do you guys have some sort of hospital or medical care where you're at in the boats, where they have a rape kit that you can take if this happens to you?
Well, I don't know about rape kits. I don't think those are on vessels. There's talk in the industry right now about including rape kits on board. However, it depends on what kind of vessel you're on, what size it is, how many people are on board. The vessel that I just got off of a couple of days ago has a hospital, but we don't have a doctor. We have a medic, right? And then other ships, your chief mate is the medic. And there's medical supplies. So it depends on the sizing, the amount of people on board, regulations.
And are these medics trained for scenarios like this?
So that is something that I've been pushing for, is that we really need to make sure that our medical professionals on board are trauma-informed, so that if someone comes to them with a situation, or they, even if they have a hunch and they need to talk to a victim or someone they think is a victim, that they can do it in a trauma-informed response to support that victim. Because often, the first person, the first few people that you talk to when you are a victim, they're going to have a huge influence on what you do next and what you do with your story. The medical professionals, especially, and our officers, we call them the top four, our captain, our chief mate, our chief engineer, and our first engineer on board. And you could even add in the chief steward, who is very important too. These people need to be trauma-informed so that when they do approach a victim or someone they think is a victim, they can do it in a way that is very supportive and get them the support they need.
Yeah. And I think, again, simple things that can create a huge difference. Yeah. And I think a lot of the times we tend to think, for me, for example, like this training shouldn't be something extra, should be part of your training, period.
That's a really good point. And that's something I've been pushing for, is why necessarily add more credentialing or more training when we already have all this training we go through? Normalize a trauma-informed response to a victim by putting it in the current training.
Exactly.
And start there. And if that doesn't work, reevaluate it and maybe add something on more later. But really try to develop it so it's a part of what we're already doing. And I think it'll be accepted easier by the industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad that we're having these conversations, because a lot of women talk to me, and just not just women, also men. And they say they feel like there's no hope, because they feel like, okay, what can be done? Because there's so many things that can be done, but they're not being done. And it's because there's everything's a little bit gray, and there's so many people in charge. There's too many people in charge within the industry. And then there, those, like you said, IMO, that's like the head of so many things. they need to really come forward. And but then again, it's who are they? Because when you start looking at all these, what do you call them, even conventions or whatever either they are, it's like, who are they? There's just like a bunch of people that nobody really knows. And everything's just so gray. And who do you go knocking on the door? Literally, who do you go knocking on the door? In America, a little bit easy because it's okay, Coast Guard, right? At least there's that.
Yeah, it needs to come from the top of IML. We need to see strong leadership there saying that sexual assault and sexual harassment is not going to be tolerated. And we expect all of our member states to take a strong stance against it and have certain regulations in play. And I can't speak on behalf of IML, but I would like them to be more vocal about sexual assault and sexual harassment in the industry. They have an amazing women in maritime program that has done so much. But we know from our own experiences as female seafarers and me as the founder of Women Offshore, that a lot of women get pushed out because of harassment and assault. And it's something that we need top leadership talking about.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that as you're talking came up is in the yachting industry, usually when sexual harassment happens or assault, even the victim, because usually it's a woman, they're the ones who end up losing the job because they're easily replaceable. And this is because I'm talking about like interior department, because you don't need a license and you're not a Y3 engineer or Y1 or I don't know, like a chief mate or whatever it is, because in the industry, it's more challenging to find a chief mate than a chief steward. Then they rather keep the perpetrator on board and let go of the victim. Does that happen in commercial vessels? Is that something that you see happening?
So it's interesting because we don't get to know the investigation process, right? We don't get to see it. Everything's kept hush. And often that is said to protect the victim and the accused. Now, talking with women in our community, I've definitely heard those stories. And I've heard from women who felt that because they accused their captain of sexual assault or sexual harassment, depending on which story I'm talking about, they felt that they were the easier one to get rid of. They were viewed as the problem for bringing up what happened to them, and they were pushed out and even fired in some cases. So it's unfortunate, but we're not going to know the whole story, right? We need to believe victims, and I believe the women who come to us and do everything I can to support them with the resources we have. But we've heard those stories.
And when it comes to evidence and taking evidence, what is the procedure that you guys have to go through on board if you are harassed or assaulted? What is it that you have to do in order to potentially get justice?
It depends on the company you work for, but often there'll be a hotline or there'll be different reporting avenues. So you choose a reporting avenue that works for you. And then most likely that will look like you being pulled into the office, taken off the ship right away, most likely for your safety. And the accused will probably be taken off their vessel as well. And an investigation is done through talking to witnesses and, of course, through hearing both sides of the story. Now, something that I've been pushing for in the industry is CCTV on board. So having cameras in passageways and accommodations and workspaces, because when you're on a vessel where there are cameras everywhere and something does happen, you have evidence right there. And there's less questioning of what happened. I think it's important that we have CCTV on ships. That's part of the regulation. It will make everyone feel a little bit safer, especially the women on board. I'm on a ship right now that has CCTV, and I hear from women on board about how they do feel safer. They know that there is a camera outside their door, and if anyone is even thinking about coming into their cabin, they're going to get caught. So most likely they're not even going to try. And I think the industry needs more of that, and that would help with
the investigation process significantly.
Yes, I totally agree. If we have a camera
versus we have we've heard those stories.
And when it comes to evidence and taking evidence, what is the procedure that you guys have to go through on board if you are harassed or assaulted? What is it that you have to do in order to potentially get justice?
It depends on the company you work for, but often there'll be a hotline or there'll be different reporting avenues. So you choose a reporting avenue that works for you. And then most likely that will look like you being pulled into the office, taken off the ship right away, most likely for your safety. And the accused will probably be taken off their vessel as well. And an investigation is done through talking to witnesses and, of course, through hearing both sides of the story. Now, something that I've been pushing for in the industry is CCTV on board. So having cameras in passageways and accommodations and workspaces, because when you're on a vessel where there are cameras everywhere and something does happen, you have evidence right there and there's less questioning of what happened. I think it's important that we have CCTV on ships. That's part of the regulations. It will make everyone feel a little bit safer, especially the women on board. I'm on a ship right now that has CCTV, and I hear from women on board about how they do feel safer. They know that there is a camera outside their door, and if anyone is even thinking about coming into their cabin, they're going to get caught. So most likely they're not even going to try. And I think the industry needs more of that, and that would help with the investigation process significantly.
Yes, I totally agree. If we have a camera to check that the tender is doing great, we should have a camera to make sure that we are safe. And again, not just women, just any crew member for whatever reason, because a lot of other things do happen that cameras can also be great for that.
And there is some pushback on that, right? There's pushback because of the cost. There's pushback because people view that their privacy is going to be taken away from them. But these cameras aren't put up inside cabins. They're not put in the mess, not in changing rooms. They're in public areas where you should all be behaving professionally. Mm-hmm. And then the cost, I understand it's going to be a little expensive. However, when you look at a woman's or really anyone's career, because sexual assault can happen to anyone, and you see the cost of that on their own life. The women I know who have experienced rape and sexual assault in the industry, companies should be paying for these camera systems and not even concerned about the cost, because if it's going to literally save a life or save a career, that's so important. And women should not be worried about their safety on board. They should be able to have their careers and go after their career dreams and not have to deal with the trauma and the experience of sexual assault and how long that will last through their lifetime.
And I guess that also comes down to the company's values and morals, right? And really standing up for them, not just talking about it. It's, hey, what are you actually, how are you showing up in that way?
Yes,
we all love a good website with a nice, beautiful mission statement and values and morals. And then it's, are you actually showing up in that way? So yeah, I feel it's really important to unite, especially with different branches of the maritime industry. Because, for example, I think that out of the entire maritime industry, the yacht industry, is not that it has it worse, is that there is a very unique scenario where if you're basically not over 500 ton, you're pretty much fucked because nobody's watching out for you. Nobody. It's not even legally their responsibility to do. MLC doesn't come involved. Coast Guard, they don't really care. There's so many different things. Like I had a person who was assaulted on a U.S. Flag vessel, went to court with, evidence, all this. Nothing happened because whatever law doesn't cover her, because she's on a small vessel that's private. And I feel like this is something that really needs to change, not just for commercial vessels, but for any vessel, because it's a business. You have a private vessel, but you have an employee, right? So it's a business. And I feel like we need to make sure that these regulations are not just for certain people within the industry. It's like across the industry, everybody the same. Because if not, then not everybody's being held accountable, and nobody's going to be, it's going to be like what it is now. Like, some people are responsible because they have to. And some people are like, that doesn't matter, because it doesn't apply to me. It should apply to everybody across the spectrum.
Absolutely.
I ask you all these questions because a lot of people don't know what it looks like for you guys. And we know what it looks like for us, and we know it sucks. So we're like, do they have it that bad? Because we have it pretty bad. And it's interesting to see that even though there's some sort of regulations, policies, HR department, processes that are black and white, not really, you still go through what we're going through.
And we're invisible often, you know, on these merchant ships and in the maritime industry. You get forgotten about as a woman. I can't even tell you how many times people have told me, I didn't know women worked on ships. You don't think about us. And going back to the point about the coveralls, it seems like a no-brainer that I could be able to get coveralls that fit my body early on in my career. But it wasn't until a few years ago, right, that was an option. And it's a cost thing, most likely, but it also seems like, why does it matter? Because women aren't really out there. Like, we've just been forgotten about for so long. And you're seeing a lot more women in the industry, which is amazing. And these companies want it. So they need to look at it from an approach other than just recruiting in order to retain and develop.
Yeah. And as you were talking about the uniform, I'm thinking of they have catalogs for uniforms. And I think I've ever seen a uniform for a deck or engineer as a woman being the one that's showing the uniform. And that's, again, something simple that uniform companies can definitely do.
And they want to change stigma.
Right?
Yeah, they want to. Like, I've talked to several uniform companies. They absolutely want to make female coveralls. They think it's so important. It's just not necessarily being ordered by the companies.
Right. What do you think, how do you think that the yachting industry and the commercial industry, or I don't know how you name it, what you're doing, how do you feel, or how do you think that we can start uniting and coming together so it's not just, oh, we're here, you guys are there, you're doing your thing, we're doing our thing, because we're really being affected the same way.
Yeah, I think that is a little difficult because neither industry really identifies with one another. Like, you pointed out the similarities, which is really important. But I think through social media and connecting with you, I've been able to see those similarities, which is great. And we need more of that. We need more conversations like this and more connections online to get the conversation going so people can understand the similarities. And I can relate because at Women Offshore, we have women involved who work on all kinds of vessels, right? And even though we're talking about the maritime industry, they identify with certain sectors. They identify with deep sea merchant marine or tugboats. Those are very different experiences. But when it comes down to what their experience is like on board as a woman, they find it very similar. So taking that model and just forming more connections, I think, is important to bridge that gap between yachting and commercial.
Yeah, I agree. And we're doing it. This is why we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
And this is how it starts. Because one of the things that I feel that a lot of people, at least within the yachting industry, they call themselves yachties. Like, I'm a yachtie. Oh, you're a seafarer. That's what you are. Call yourself whatever you want, but you're a seafarer at the end of the day. Like, whatever happens to the seafarers, that's what you're going to end up, that's what you're being looked at. And when it comes down to law, that's what's going to, you're going to go all under. And I think having those little names have created some sort of distortion
from, I'm not a seafarer because I'm not on a commercial vessel, versus, oh, I'm just a yacht because I'm in a private vessel, which is like not the reality of things. And this, we really need to move away from that and realize that we're all seafarers, we're all part of the maritime industry, and we all go through the same things, and we're all really wanting the same changes. And we need to start looking at other people, other sectors of the industry, so we can, again, there's strength in numbers. We need to unite, because SASH is something that is not just in yachting and not just in commercial. It's everywhere. And we really need to make sure that the big top people that are the ones who actually have the power to change regulations and implement a safer environment for us understand that it's not just shore wanting this. It's like the entire community of the seafarers of the maritime industry wanting this.
And it's not just the female gender either. It's everyone. And even for people who think that it's women being harassed and assaulted, be an ally. We need men opening up doors and having these conversations. We need everyone involved.
Yeah, and I just recently, we posted something about whoever wanted to come forward and share their story with us, and a man reached out, and he was the first man that has ever reached out. And he shared with me his sexual harassment story. And it was really interesting. I was like, I was quite honored to choose me to share his story, because it's not often that a man, even though they do go through it, a lot of men are not wanting to share it for many different reasons, especially the stigma around men don't share emotions, stress and all that stuff. So it is important that we do understand that, yes, it is the majority. It happens to the majority to women, but it's not that it doesn't happen to men as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And whatever we're wanting to change or shift in the maritime industry is for not just women, like you said, it's for everybody. Because at the end of the day, we need an environment that's safe for everybody, not just women, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything else you would like to share today?
No, thanks so much for having me. It was great to be on the show.
It's my pleasure. And I will put the links below for whoever who feels called to follow Women Offshore and see what they're up to. And maybe they do have resources that you may be interested in, especially if you're like in the deck department. You may feel more related to what they share as well, versus like maybe what I usually share, which is interior things. So yeah, that's another thing, because apart from She of the Sea, within the yachting industry, we don't really have a lot of women talking about being a woman in the deck side.
And yeah, or engineering, any sort of technical role.
Yeah, when I deck, also engineer.
Okay.
We put it all in one.
Okay.
Not that many of us.
I don't know that.
If it's nine of us, it's like interior deck, that's it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so it is a little bit different, but at the end of the day, it's really not, because it's almost like a microcosm of the cosmos. It's like you guys are at a bigger scale of us because you have more people, but it's the same thing, really. It's just a little bit of it's a mirror. So anyway, thank you so much, Ali, for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and for saying yes to speaking about these topics that need to be normalized, and for what you're doing for the industry. And I'm
so thank you
to continue to join forces with you and all the people in your community to create the change we really want to see.
Thank you for everything you're doing, Marianne. It's great. You have a great show, and I'm happy to be a part of it. So thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys, this is a wrap. Until next time.